we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an Amazon customer review of a lunchbox, read by Susan Ray.
I would thoroughly recommend this lunchbox. It's made of stainless steel and is perfect for taking my grandson out for the day.
Our thanks to Nick Smith for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Helen Lewis. And opposite them, on my left, Eleanor Tiernan and Paul Sinha. Francis, who's been accused of being out of order? Order.
Do you mean...
order!
That one.
The very same.
Yes. He does like the sound of his own voice, doesn't he, little Burko? He's quite a preening popinjay. I mean, whatever you think of his interpretation of House of Commons procedural precedents and things, he does enjoy himself, doesn't he?
Order!
And over Christmas New Year, I had best part of 2 weeks and not once hearing the B word. It was so restful. And then it all kicks off again, and you think last week we had the ferry, the nonsense about the ferry company with no ferries, like sort of Potemkin village of ferries. This week we had the Potemkin village of... They're all organised by Chris Grayling, noticeably, where he had to organise a traffic jam, a Potemkin fake traffic jam, and he couldn't even do that. This is a man who can't run a railway service, but he can't even organise a little traffic jam in Kent, it turns out, Transport Secretary. And the day after that, the Commons voted, possibly as a result of this non-traffic jam, to stop the Treasury spending money on projects of that sort. And they were so excited at beating the government, they came back and did it again the next day with Burko's cooperation. Is it Burko or Burkow?
Burko,
yes, OK.
Pronunciation. The BBC pronunciation unit says Burko.
Well, if it makes it any easier, the little fella, that'll do.
Yeah. He really is a dishy little pudding, isn't he?
He's getting ever so slightly chubby, and it makes him even lovelier, I think. But it was something to do with putting... He allowed an amendment to be put to a business motion which had already been passed, effectively saying it wouldn't be amended. But then Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General, being a lawyer and a QC, stood up and said, I think you'll find that there are procedural ways of doing this. And Burko said, oh, yes, I don't know anything about that. But his officials told him he shouldn't do it because there were no precedents at all. It went against all precedents. So it's very much for the conscientia, I think, this argument about procedural precedents. But next week we get on to the exciting bit because we have a vote on Tuesday, which is the meaningful vote. So exciting, having a meaningful vote at long last. And then, thanks to Dominic Grieve, if she doesn't win that vote, then within 3 days she has to produce Plan B. And it could well be his best album since the defamation of Strickland Banks, I think.
To be fair, that is an excellent album.
Yeah. About that. I could read any amount about that traffic jam. That's the only Brexit story that I've been interested in for ages. I mean, first of all, there is the problem of the fact that our government literally couldn't organise a traffic jam on the A246.
Only half of them turned up.
Right, and they were being paid £550 each. I think Tom Peck of The Independent did the best joke about this, where he said it was Chris Grayling's brainchild, i.e. an orphan.
Has anyone else lost the will to live over Brexit? Because I certainly have.
I think you're completely unrepresentative, Paul. Pubs and bars up and down the land, people talk about how excited they are about the whole thing and just how it's brought so much joy to their lives.
I consider myself fairly politically engaged, and yesterday, watching the news and watching the telly, I felt like a 75-year-old man trying to get into the first 10 minutes of Game of Thrones. It was just... And talking of confused 75-year-old men, perhaps this is what Jeremy Corbyn's tactic has all been about thus far. Perhaps he's watching the news and going, this is all a bit complicated. If I just stand back, I can take advantage when it all goes wrong. You'll know, Miles, about the famous Australian speed skater Stephen Bradbury, who won a gold medal at the Salt Lake City Olympics in 2002 by staying at the back. And then all 5 skaters in front of him crashed into each other and knocked themselves out of the race, and he came and won. I put it to you that Jeremy Corbyn is very much trying to be the Stephen Bradbury of politics. And with this prolonged thing, you're wondering who on earth gets to benefit from how prolonged this whole thing is. And the answer, quite clearly, is Benedict Cumberbatch. We now know who's behind this whole thing, I think.
And May, do we think May is going to convince any Labour MPs to back her deal?
I mean, who knows what Kate Hoey does? You know, she's a law of mystery unto even probably Kate Hoey. So she might get one or two Labour leavers on side. But, I mean, there are so many MPs who have come out and said that they won't back the deal, that reversing that would be really, really very embarrassing. A couple of them have already kind of gone, it's this or nothing, so we'll have to go for it. But, I mean, I just wonder if she'll pull the vote again. I don't know. Do you think she's going to go through with it and watch it all go down in flames and come up with Plan B?
Well, I suppose if she pulls the vote, she no longer has to do her 3-day trick.
She no longer has to do anything. Not even she could go home and put her feet up.
Well, it'd be, I mean, if the whole Christmas New Year lull just carried on, I did think at the time, you know, if we all keep quiet about this, no one will ever remember it happened.
This is the ever-accelerating haunted merry-go-round that is Brexit, where the government suffered 2 defeats in Parliament and Speaker John Bercow faced criticism for allowing a cross-party amendment to be voted on. Bercow was accused of unilaterally changing parliamentary rules. I don't fully understand what happened, but I think he said from now on it was shirts versus skins. And if you ask me, absolutely all for it. Commons leader Andrea Leadsom said his actions were extremely concerning, whereas Dominic Grieve said, I'm so excited and I just can't hide it. Bercow's about to lose control and I think I like it. Bercow was also falsely accused of having an anti-Brexit car sticker, but even if it were true, it's simply no way to measure a man. I drove a second-hand Fiesta with a honk-if-you-bonk sticker on it for much of the late 1990s and look at me now. I've still got the sticker, but it's on a Volvo. Also this week, as part of planning for a potential no-deal Brexit, a convoy of 89 lorries took part in test runs to Dover, which were described as successful by the Department of Transport. Now, that was mainly because Chris Grayling was allowed to honk one of the horns. 2 points to Francis. Helen, who's in with a shout of being arrested?
This must be the scenes this week at College Green outside Parliament where Anna Soubry, the pro-Remain Tory MP, was called a Nazi. Journalist Owen Jones and the anti-Brexit campaigner Femi Oluwole were also targeted. I have to say that France had the Gilets Jaunes protesters, and it is proof if proof were needed that everything sounds cooler in French. Right? Yeah. French Gilets Jaunes, English man in high-vis vest. It kind of lacks a certain amount of glamour, I think. But I just... These people are... I mean, I kind of want to call them arseholes, but I think the PC term is members of the harassment community. And what they just... They just...
Harassholes?
Harassholes. You know, they've been standing... I mean, it's been quite lively down at College Green now since last year, and usually if you go down and do TV down... You know, the previous hazard was just having to kind of talk about dresses with Emily Thornberry, which I always quite enjoy. But now it's running a kind of gauntlet of people shouting either pro or anti-Brexit. But the good news is that I went down earlier today and the worst hate crime that was happening was a busker playing the bagpipes.
So has it all been resolved?
Well, the police have now been told that they've actually got to act. Funnily enough, it doesn't matter. You can call people... I'm sure most people on this panel have been called a Nazi, such is the way of the internet, but maybe that's just me.
I've been called a grammar Nazi. Does that count?
Did you invade Grammar Poland?
No, just... I think I chided someone... for having a dangling participle before they invaded Poland.
Hitler only had one dangling participle. No...
I don't know, have you been enjoying these protests?
Very much. What I found curious was who these people chose to intimidate. They chose Anna Soubry, a lady. They chose Femi from the BAME background. And then they chose Owen Jones, a gay background. And I thought, well, I'm sure those guys can take care of themselves in a fight. But it's interesting that they didn't choose the 6'4" Sir Keir Starmer. You know, he's quite physically imposing. I just wondered why those guys didn't...
Are you thinking of a different Keir Starmer? Is there a secret twin 6'4" Keir Starmer?
It'd be amazing if his twin was also called Keir, though, wouldn't it?
Did a man sleep with you by telling you he was Keir Starmer? We've all been there.
Can I point out, as a member of both the gay and BAME community, that I cannot handle myself in a fight whatsoever? I'll give a wrestle a good go, but not a fight. The important thing is this has been going on and... Pretty sure Helen and France will agree. This is the culmination of decades of the coarsening of political discourse. It's just getting nastier and nastier and nastier. And now you can't have an opinion that people disagree with without people saying to you, go back to selling crisps and scoring 48 goals for England. It's a worrying thing. The word Nazi, of course, is overused, and the meaning of Nazi has changed. It used to mean you were somebody who was a Nazi, and now it's used to label anyone who has a different political opinion to you, in the same way that the word Brazilian has changed. It used to mean somebody from Brazil, and increasingly now means a Nazi.
This is the news that MPs have urged the police to tackle harassment outside the Houses of Parliament following verbal abuse and physical intimidation by protesters this week. The protesters are a British version of the French Gilets Jaunes protest, but a sort of budget version, like the difference between Disneyland Paris and an illegal fun fair in the car park of an abandoned B&Q. This is all particularly upsetting, as in 2019 we marked the 80th anniversary of when Anna Soubry invaded Poland and annexed the free city of Danzig. No, sorry, I may have got that mixed up. The BBC has said it has no plans to stop broadcasting from College Green, and may I be the first to say, thank God. I love nothing more than an outside broadcast, giving the news a sort of Glastonbury Festival vibe. Sure, at the moment it's an interview with Anna Soubry, but what next? Perhaps some playful banter with Nile Rodgers, or a stripped-down acoustic performance by Justice Secretary David Gawke. Whatever it is, I'm opening a strongbow, and I am locking in. 2 points to Helen. Eleanor, what has made it through airport security?
Is this the story of the drone sighting at Heathrow Airport, which caused the airport to shut down again, as happened at Gatwick before Christmas? Yep.
Yes, yep.
Great. I'll continue.
Two points, but carry on.
And this is a story, obviously very bad news for people who were going on their holidays. Good news for people who weren't going on their holidays, the rest of us. And very good news for people who are going on holidays under duress, because they got to have less holiday. It's very confusing what's going on here. Obviously now I think people, we're just going to have to accept it. It's just something that's going to be part of life. Now you're going to have to go to the airport a couple of days early before bring supplies with you. I'm not sure about the, you know, because there's so much confusion about where their drones at Gatwick. They said they actually saw some at Heathrow, which was, I guess, good news. So obviously a plane can't take off if there's a sighting of a drone. But what about birds? You know, and what's to stop a, you know, a birds have mental health issues. You know, what's to stop them from flying?
That sounds like a line from Loose Women.
I mean, I think an element, this is sort of predictable, isn't it, this kind of paper? Who could have foreseen that allowing the unregulated sale of low-cost flying objects would lead to chaos? It's unthinkable, isn't it? But for some reason, people haven't only been using them for good. Very upsetting.
It's only a mystery until you realise who has the most to benefit from people being stranded at the airport, and that is surely Pret-a-Manger. I mean... They are losing in the PR war to Greggs in a massive way over the last couple of weeks. They need to do something desperately, and they don't know how to make vegan sausage rolls, so this is their plan, I think.
It's them and Toblerone and the Sunglass Hut. This is Heathrow Airport, where flights were temporarily stopped this week after a drone was reported to have been seen. Some people have criticised Transport Secretary Chris Grayling for not doing enough, but in fairness to him, he has been on eBay looking for a scarecrow. Unfortunately, the Environmental Protection Agency has insisted that we simply cannot interfere with the drone, as if a human were to touch it, its mother will not recognise it and it will get rejected from the nest. 2 points to Eleanor. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Helen have 4, but Eleanor and Paul have 5. We start round two with something seen on the Hatton Park Locals Facebook group.
We had a successful big clean-up in the village today and we filled over 50 poo bags, thanks to everyone who donated.
Thanks to Rebecca Johnson for sending us that. Paul, have a listen to this. Doctor, can't you see I'm burning?
Well, that was unpleasant. But, Paul... Who's been engaged in some blue Skype thinking?
I've been asked this because of my medical background. I'm a former GP. I'm proud to say it's been estimated I saved the lives of over 5,000 patients when I left a career in medicine. And this is a speech outlining a 10-year plan for the NHS that Theresa May gave in Liverpool. And if there's ever a good time to outline a 10-year plan to save the NHS, it's 9 years into your government. I think it's fair. She missed a trick by not doing her old trick of coming on to an ABBA song, maybe SOS or Gimme, Gimme, Gimme a Bed After Midnight. And although I'm no Tory, like all plans for the NHS, there are a lot of good ideas, because that's what political parties do when they announce plans for the NHS. They don't pack it with bad ideas. They're not going to say compulsory Rothmans for everybody or VAT on an apple a day. There's lots of good ideas. But coming up with good ideas after 9 years of government is a bit like Vladimir Putin promising to boost the Wiltshire tourism industry. But the headline move is that patients will be seen not face-to-face, but on Skype, which is a revolutionary new idea that will terrify both doctors and patients. I'm 48, and I'm not really from a computer savvy. When I was at school, the closest thing we had to a computer was a little Sri Lankan kid who was very good at maths. So I know the average GP, and they're not especially computer savvy. A lot of is your health really going to be dependent on the quality of your broadband? In which case, we're going to get a suspiciously high death toll amongst the Virgin Media community.
It's just for rashes, isn't it, really, Skype? I mean, that must be...
already, or you think... Is that what you currently use it for?
I cannot confirm or deny that. But that must be... I mean, I've watched Embarrassing Bodies. That's what I'm saying, is that people just want to get out their rashes on television. And this could be a chance for them. You could beam the Skype to a wider community.
I think it's probably quite open to abuse. You know, if just say a kid wanted to, you know, get a day off school or something, you know, it would be easy to fake a rash. You know, just draw some red spots on yourself, and how would the doctor be able to tell the difference?
Just sort of set your webcam to low resolution.
Yeah. The other thing I'd say is that the only good thing about being a GP, the only exciting moment in your day, is when a patient doesn't turn up. That's a joyous, joyous moment. To take that moment away from a GP could cause even more depression amongst the GP community, I feel.
This is the government's new 10-year plan for the NHS, which could see a third of GP and hospital appointments replaced by digital consultations, for example, via video call. The service hasn't started yet, which begs the question, to whom exactly have I been sending those pictures of my rash?
I've only just realised that digital consultation sounds like a euphemism for a prostate exam.
This has been in the pipeline for a number of years, but things really kicked into gear when Health Secretary Matt Hancock had to come up with a quick excuse when caught in his office showing his bum to a webcam. 2 points to Paul. Francis, who tried to talk and got shut down?
Tried to talk. Oh, right. Is this the shutdown of American government?
It is the shutdown.
The talk. Well, the talk, I don't know what the talk is, but it's been going on... It's about to enter its fourth week, I think, this shutdown. And it's all because of Trump's bally wall, because he wanted $5 billion for his wall and the Democrats in Congress wouldn't give it to him. And so he threw a tantrum and shut down the government. It's obviously very worrying for people when the entire government, American administration, shuts down. I mean, even more worrying what it's going to be like when it reopens and he's got it at his mercy again. But he actually gave a press conference this week to say, I do not have temper tantrums. I think he tweeted about it, and he then said, I'm going to declare a national emergency if there's any more of these insults saying I have temper tantrums, just to prove it. And he said the national emergency said, yes, I probably will do that, maybe definitely, which is such a great Trumpism, which means he almost certainly will. And then he can call in the military. if it's a national emergency, he can call in the army and the National Guard and God knows who else and get them to build the wall for him, free of charge, so it won't cost $5 billion. So this might well happen. And he said it might keep the government closed for months, if need be. And you'd think if it went on for quite a few months, the Americans might come to their senses and realise all that stuff in the 1770s was a bit of a mistake and that perhaps they were better off before they got this idea of take back control. And they'll come running to us and the Queen will take over again. The last monarch they had was this old German, so it'll be just like old times, except she's not mad, so it's progress, fairly. And they might, because I mean, we are setting such a good example to the world of smooth and efficient government. It'd be silly for them not to really come to us for a bit of advice, I think.
There was this business about how angry he got during the meeting, wasn't there? Mike.
Well, he was said to have banged the table because yeah. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the Democrat leaders in Congress, came to see him. And either they walked out or he threw them out. But anyway, there was a lot of shouting and table banging. But he then had to issue a statement saying, I did not bang the table and I didn't have a temper tantrum. Well, I was having fun till my daddy took my T-bird away.
Mike Pence, it was, disputed it. He said the president walked into the room and passed out candy.
Why is Mike Pence still there? Because they said that all non-essential members of the government have been sent home.
I try not to focus on him himself. I've given up trying to understand what's going on with this guy. I find it more useful to look at the people who are around him, the people who are keeping him in power, the members of the Republican Party. And I've got to say, there's something quite unnerving from my point of view about them because they all have something in common. There's a fellow called Kelly there. There's another guy called Flynn. Yeah, there's a guy called Bill O'Reilly. There's another fella on Fox News. His name is Sean Hannity. Yes, they are all Irish, these people. There's one guy who was arrested, a fella called George Papadopoulos. And when I heard his name, I was delighted. I said, that's great. Now, at least one of them isn't Irish. But then I remembered that there are a family of O'Dopoulos's. up in Donegal.
This is the USA government shutdown, where an impasse has been reached over the funding of Donald Trump's proposed border wall. The president has warned that America is facing a crisis of the heart and a crisis of the soul, at which point he looked to camera, rose from his stool at the key change and handed over to Gary Barlow for the chorus. Absolute banger. Great to see the lads back together again. Many national agencies, such as the National Parks and Smithsonian Museums, have had to close, and Melania has been powered down, folded into her box and put on standby. Of course, we don't have the same system here. The closest we come to a government shutdown is when Theresa May goes missing and is found some hours later in her airing cupboard, screaming into a towel. 2 points to Francis. Paul, whose kettle needs descaling?
Oh, this is a story that triggered me because I have all sorts of phobias. This is a guy called Barry something or other, and he went shopping at Argos in Kensington High Street and bought a kettle from Russell Hobbs. Took the kettle out, boiled some water for a cup of soup or tea or whatever it is Barry drinks, and then...
Barry likes tea.
Then found in the box a live snake, a baby snake. Baby snake, do-do-do-do-do-do. And that shock, of course, was their hearing that there was an Argos on Kensington High Street. Gave the game away there. What I like most about this story, I mean, a horrific story at every level, is that Argos were contacted for a comment, and they said, "We're surprised by this incident." I'm glad they are. I think when you've lost the sense of surprise that a live 1.5-metre snake was delivered with a Russell Hobbs kettle, you've lost your entire life's element of surprise. So I'm glad that Argos was surprised.
I like to think he heard it hiss first and thought, God, that's funny, I haven't switched it on yet.
I read the story, it's horrific. He thought at first it was just like a bit of the packaging, so he picked it up and put it in the bin, and then it started wriggling.
It was only wee. I mean, come on. He got it under a saucepan lid. Anything you can get under a saucepan lid is fine by me.
Really?
Yeah, that's my rule.
Literally anything.
This is Barry Downs, a man from London who bought a new kettle from Argos only to find a snake inside. When Mr. Downs discovered the snake on the kitchen floor, it convinced him to eat an apple, after which he felt great shame and and felt compelled to cover himself with a fig leaf, which I imagine was quite the relief for the officer who attended from the RSPCA. The snake was a corn snake, so-called because, unlike regular snakes, you can use it to thicken a stew. Finding a snake in a kettle is the British High Street equivalent of a horse head in your bed. Argos have a bone to pick with Barry, and until he gives back that tiny blue pen, the threats will only escalate. 2 points to Paul. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes, thanks to Thomas Raffin. This is a tweet from the Bolton branch of Momentum, the Corbynite outriders in the Labour Party. Tonight, we are planning a meeting to plan our campaign against voter ID, a shocking attempt by the Tories to subvert democracy in the UK. 6 p.m. at the Socialist Club. Members only, please bring your membership card.
Eleanor.
This one is somebody called David Paris. Saw this in the Marks and Spencers on Grafton Street in Dublin. It's a sign, it's a permanent sign. He sent in the image. It says, "The rooftop terrace cafe is located on the top floor." David not doing very much for the stereotype of Irish people.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Helen have 8, but this week's winners are Eleanor and Paul with 9. Before we leave you, here is an advertisement for a workshop taking place at Leicester Vaughan College, sent in by Rhiannon Hollick Cooper.
The Northern Sky in Winter. In this workshop, we'll be looking at the night sky in the Northern Hemisphere during winter. The introductory workshop costs £35 and it will be led by an expert astrophysicist who has worked on Earth, Jupiter and Saturn.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Frances Wheen, Helen Lewis, Eleanor Tiernan and Paul Sinha. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by Laura Major, Robin Morgan and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Tom Mayhew and Kat Sadler. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.